Everybody has one of those. Did anybody come thinking they were going to hear Lydern speak? Did you come thinking that? No? Oh, Max, you came just for that? Yeah. You're going to be disappointed, Max. Lydern had to go back and see her mother, who is quite ill in Norway. So I'm filling in as best I can in this talk. And also in life. Yeah, that's not going as well as it could. But, so as Wes said, happy Mother's Day to me too. Last week I talked some about posture. The slated talk was on posture and breathing. And I went over posture mostly last week, and I thought I'd focus a little more on breathing today, talk some about breathing. But I can't talk about breathing without talking a little bit about posture. I'm such a posture fan. I went into Mount Baldy Zen Center when I was 25 years old. I saw a picture, a black and white picture of me, I don't know, when I was 23, 22, on a hiking trip or something. This was recently I saw this, and I was like this, you know, looking at the camera like this. I was 5'10 and a half when I went in, and after a year I was 5'11. So, it's done wonders for me, this practice. If nothing else, it's at least given me another half inch. And I really feel that part of this, kind of part of the practice that is not, you know, talked about that much, I suppose, is just, you know, we do a lot of Zazen, we sit up straight, and it changes our literal posture toward the world for a moment. You know, rather than this, we experiment doing this just for a few minutes. But over time, that becomes a different posture when we go out into the world as well. And I really think that has an effect on our life. To open up our front side to the world. So in Zazen, we ask that you sit up straight. And have your head up, you know, not up like this, but straight, not down like this, looking at the floor, but even. Your chest open. If anything, just a little bit up your ribcage, with your shoulders relaxed. And that becomes, that's an open, we do that so that we can open toward this moment, toward this particular moment. And as we go out into life, I have found myself noticing my posture when I'm about to go into a difficult situation, a room that I'm unsure about. And I find myself, okay, open. And see how that changes the dynamic. Recently somebody wrote me about a sad time they were going through and said that posture had really helped them. Just sitting with this posture allowed them to experience that sadness. Kind of hold that sadness in a way, rather than curling up in a ball around it. That's okay too. That's a perfectly understandable response, but to mix it in with this open posture, okay, all right, I'm sad. To be able to feel that, with kind of in a straightforward manner. So I think that's, I'm a big fan of the posture. I was taught when I entered the monastery that You know, really the two great aids to this practice of sitting zazen, which is working somehow toward finding a place in which we don't feel like we need to think. The two great aids in that are posture and breathing. And I think of the posture as roughly kind of yang, sit up straight, and the breathing roughly as yin, relax. And the posture also gives us a kind of vessel, a container in which we can feel that breath. You know, if we raise up a little bit, we can feel the breath in our belly. And if you sit like this, your hands make a circle around your belly, where you're to breathe from. And when we had Dr. Marcy Hamrick in here, she used to live on the island and was a Sangha member. She talked about breathing. Remember that, Max? That talk was very detailed talk about breathing from a medical perspective. And I think about that sometime, how the diaphragm, you know, is what we talk about breathing from our belly. Well, we're not breathing from our belly, or we're breathing from our lungs, come on. But it's this whole band around here, which goes around all the way to the back, that causes the breathing. It's the diaphragm that causes the breathing. So by putting some attention to that, that's the muscle that causes our breathing. It's right here, right in our core. So to pay some attention to that helps us naturally deepen our breathing. And our breathing is with us all the time. Metaphorically, my breath is that, for me, is that that universal aspect of myself that doesn't have to think, that doesn't care what's going on, whether I'm up or down. I'm just going to be breathing through all of the peaks and valleys. It's the kind of equanimity aspect. Doesn't it? Yeah. I'm going to read you a little bit here from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind on Breathing. Many of you probably have read this. It's also a little advertisement for Wednesday nights when we're reading this book chapter by chapter. And I, coincidentally, I think probably tonight, I think they did posture last week, and I think, this Wednesday they're going to do breathing. So here's a little preview. About three paragraphs I'm going to read, so settle in. When we practice Zazen, our mind always follows our breathing. When we inhale, the air comes into the inner world. When we exhale, the air goes out to the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. We say inner world or outer world, but actually there is just one whole world. In this limitless world, our throat is like a swinging door. The air comes in and goes out like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think I breathe, the I is extra. There is no you to say I. What we call I is just a swinging door which moves when we inhale and when we exhale. It just moves. That is all. When your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement, there is nothing. No I, no world, no mind, no body, just a swinging door. When we practice Zazen, all that exists is the movement of the breathing. But we are aware of this movement. You should not be absent-minded. But to be aware of the movement does not mean to be aware of your small self, but rather your universal nature or Buddha nature. This kind of awareness is very important because we are usually one-sided. our usual understanding of life is dualistic. You, I, this, that, good, bad. But actually, these discriminations are themselves the awareness of the universal existence. You means to be aware of the universe in the form of you, and I means to be aware of it in the form of I. You and I are just swinging doors. This kind of understanding is necessary. This should not even be called understanding. It is actually the true experience of life through Zen practice. So when you practice Zazen, there is no idea of time or space. You may say, we started sitting at 5:45 in this room. Thus you have some idea of time, 5:45, and some idea of space in this room. Actually, what you're doing, however, is just sitting and being aware of the universal activity. That is all. The universal activity is the activity that is always going on without ourselves. And Zen practice, for me, is about realizing that universal activity and feeling it more often. According to Buddhism, it's there. And there is an aspect of ourselves that easily feels that. There's an aspect of ourselves that doesn't have to think or worry or plan. It's just that that other aspect, ourself, is so exciting and interesting. I really feel like as human beings, we got really good at this thinking project and ordering and segmenting. And it takes some practice, and that's why Zen practice is difficult, to get back to, feels like getting back to me, getting down to something much simpler, just breathing, just experiencing this moment. And that's that universal aspect. Breathing goes on all the time. No matter what is the, no matter all the ups and downs of our life, we have a tendency, I have a tendency to lean forward in my life toward the next thing, toward the next big thing, the next event. And breathing and posture. And this Zazen itself, literally in Zazen, we sit up straight. We don't lean. We're not leaning forward. We stop going forward. Just sitting here and experiencing what this moment's like, not the next one. We just had a little workshop with Genko, Kathy Blackman. Lisa was there. And we did some walking meditation. And then sat down, and Genko said, after a little bit, said, so what was it like the moment you sat down? And all of us said, I don't know, I don't really remember that moment. I remember the walking, where we were being real, but the sitting down, that was a transition moment. Not so interesting. Our life is made up of those transition moments, going from one event to another event. Mm-hmm. And this practice, suggests that there's time in between that makes up the rest of our life that we miss often. So that made me think about this thing that I found out about a couple of years ago. Wes, you're a scientist, you probably know about this. Chronostasis. You ever heard of that? It's fascinating. I wish today I had brought a TikTok clock. We changed our TikTok clock out because it TikToks, and I just sit in the living room, and so we have one that just doesn't TikTok. But Try this at home if you have a clock that goes with a second hand that goes tick, tick, tick. Just look here and then look up at the clock. The first tick will appear significantly longer than the rest of the ticks. It's weird. It's one of those weird things. Try it. Just glance up at it, and the first tick will appear to go longer, and then the rest of the ticks will. So it goes, you know what? This is fascinating. It's because our eye, when we move, I mean, when we move our eye, you know, we should have a blur. When I go like that, we should have this blur, and that would make us dizzy. And so we cut that out. Our brain cuts that out, that movement out. And this is the really weird part. When we get there, it backfills in our memory the whatever we just saw. So it actually somehow goes back in time and fills it in. Look it up. What did I just call it? Chronostasis. Yeah, chronostasis. There's videos about it and so forth. So it actually backfills that time with the thing that you're your target. And I just think that's such a great analogy in a way for the way we live our lives, which is to concentrate on the thing, you know, the next big event. And according to this guy, all right, it's YouTube, but on Vsauce that my son likes to watch, you know, 40 minutes of the day is taken up in that space. Fascinating to me. Anyhow, just as an analogy, you know, it's I don't think it's more than that, but it's analogous, it seems to me, to an analogy for this tendency that we have to not make those things important. Maybe our body does it for different reasons, but I tend to not make important those in-between steps in my life. And it's not just a parlor game that we're playing. Like, okay, let's see if we can be aware of more of the day so I have more of the day. For me, it's really, there's a reason for it. And that is that to realize that my life, my whole life is precious. To hold me back from planning the next thing, identifying the event after event after event as the important thing, and to realize that this whole life is part of my life. So I think, and for me, breathing does that, gets me in tune with that aspect. Breathing just keeps going over and over and over again. Tell us about breathing. I thought I would ask you, Wes, to say something about counting your breath. There's many different ways to work on your, or to become aware of your breathing. I was taught just to follow my breath. So to sit up straight and to notice it. Shinro Suzuki talks about sort of the breath being all there is when you're really breathing. And for me, I've always used the breath as a way in to meditation. But then there's also the sound, there's sight, there's smell. It's a way into the present moment. But counting breath is another way to really become aware of your breathing. Something that I wasn't taught early on, but that I use more in the last 3 years than I've ever used. Why don't you say something about it, Wes? About the way you were taught.
So the problem isn't so much thinking, it's thoughting. Thinking is something active when we think, oh, you know, I have to go home and make breakfast for my kids or whatever. You know, what am I going to make? You need to do that, otherwise, you know, you're going to walk in the house and say, I don't have any eggs. So, I mean, you know, thought is necessary, and then we're human beings, and it's a good thing that we think. But most of the time we thought. It's just over and over again. I'm going to go home, and what are my kids going to say, and how am I going to be? What was that tune I heard yesterday? And then, oh, yesterday was a nice day, and today it isn't so nice. It's just on and on and on. And it's habitual, and we all suffer from this. And it really takes us out of the present moment. And for some of us, it's tunes that go over and over. I was mulching the garden yesterday, and I kept hearing the same tune, same line of the same tune. It's ridiculous. But there is something that we can do, and we can focus on our breath, and just the way if you don't entertain a guest, eventually you'll get bored and go home. If you don't entertain those thoughts, they will diminish in frequency and diminish in intensity. So one of the things we can do is to focus on our breath, to get out of this habitual thoughting mode. And it is easy to say, let's just focus on our breath. Let's just empty our minds. First line thing is to say, let's empty our minds. Anyone who's done Zazen says, no, you can't empty your mind. You can't just say, have an empty mind. It's also very hard, I find, to just say, I'm going to pay attention to my breath, because there's so many other things that go on. And that's why counting is important, because it's a way of telling us when we're not paying attention to our breath. So if we say one, two, you're supposed to count. I was taught to count up to 10 and count on the exhales. Count on the inhales, it doesn't really matter. There's some reasons I think that it's good to count on the exhales. But when you hear yourself saying 13, or you hear yourself saying 7 over and over again, you know that you're not doing it. Otherwise, it's, you know, very easy to think, yeah, you know, I'm really doing well, you know, and you're just thinking again. Yasutani Roshi, who's one of the great Roshis in Japan, used to say that he thought that counting his breath was, and this is, you know, long after he'd become a Roshi, was a very important practice for him, because it taught him when he was deceiving himself about how much attention he was paying. Just said one more thing about counting your breath, and that is that when one does Zazen, if you are really involved in your breathing, you discover that your breath becomes much longer. And Shagohara Roshi, who's a monastery up on Whidbey Island, teaches his students to consciously lengthen their breaths in the same way that, you know, when we're really concentrating, we're not like this, we're sitting up straight. And if you start sitting up straight, it's easier to concentrate. So he also says that when you are breathing, if you consciously lengthen your breath, it is easier to focus and put all your attention, all your energy on your breathing. So instead of going 1, 2, 3, and you don't do it out loud, obviously. Mm-hmm. Doing it loud, loud, so you can hear how it goes. But if you try it, you know, we're all experimentalists. We have to find what works for us. I just say try counting your breath on the exhalations, counting from 1 to 10. When you go astray, come back to 1.
That's great, Wes. Thanks a lot. We are all experimenting, and there are different ways to. These are. You know, you'll hear something from Wes, you'll hear something from Max, you'll hear something from me, you'll hear something from a visiting teacher. Try these things. See what works. One thing that I've experimented with, I'll just finish with this, is I have convinced myself, not fully, but partially, that usually the best use of my time when sitting zazen is to really work on sitting zazen and not plan for whatever the next thing is, speaking of the next event and leaning forward. It's so fun and interesting, and it seems really compelling to plan for that next thing, especially if it's something big, you know, a big problem we have or something that we really need to solve. I have tried, and I really am convincing myself more and more that the best use of my time is just to sit and breathe. That I will approach that, because in order to test it, I have to try. Okay, so let's see how that goes. Let's see how the outcome of that was. That the outcomes are better when, for me, when I'm just sitting and breathing, and then I approach that situation fresh, like that. There are times when I have to think about things, just like Wes said. We have to use our brains. But while sitting, I really am beginning to believe that the best use of my time is just to sit and breathe. See, you know, see for yourself how that works. Just to sit and breathe, and then to approach the world.